You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Childhood obesity has become something of a national health crisis. In 2010, more than one-third of children and adolescents were overweight or obese. But now doctors are starting to see that, in addition to putting kids at higher risk for a variety of illnesses, being overweight is making their bodies age faster. Alice Park is a staff writer at Time, where she covers health, medicine, nutrition, and fitness. Her article, Young Kids, Old Bodies, appears in the March 3rd issue of the magazine. And I am very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
What are some of the health conditions that obese people are more at risk for than their normal weight counterparts?
Well, I think we've known some of them for a long time. Heart disease, diabetes, joint issues. And these are all sort of some of the obvious consequences of carrying around extra weight more than you should.
Hardening of the arteries, stroke?
Yes, for heart disease, yes. And changes in the way that your body metabolizes and breaks down energy and glucose. So that's why you're at increased risk for diabetes as well. But what's happening now is, I think, after a couple of decades of seeing the obesity epidemic really engulf our nation. And, you know, as you said, up to a third of people are obese and two-thirds are overweight or obese. We're beginning to get a better appreciation for, you know, what's happening kind of under the surface, what's happening, how those fat cells are actually influencing our metabolism, the way our cells work, and how our cells age. So we're seeing things like fatty liver disease in children who are preteens. And this is something that in most cases you don't see until you're in your 40s or your 50s.
Aren't people also more likely to get certain cancers and also less likely to survive certain cancers?
Some kind of cancers are associated with obesity, because what we're understanding is that these fat cells and the fat tissue is not inert. So it is pumping out all kinds of things that can affect metabolism. It's essentially acting like a stressor. So we're seeing some interesting studies that correlate what happens to, let's say, childhood cancer survivors who are exposed to radiation, chemotherapy, some pretty toxic agents, and what's happening with their cells and what's happening with the cells of obese children. So we're really seeing that this is not a benign thing that's happening.
Don't fat cells kind of protect themselves?
They do. They produce a bunch of things called cytokines. And these are agents that are really meant to look for things like bacteria, viruses. And because fat is actually a very sort of hoarded resource. It's what the cells use for energy. So they don't want to give it away too easily. So they do release these compounds to protect themselves, but too much of it, having excess fat, especially at a young age, can also lead to problems like inflammation and some of the things that we're seeing here.
When our prehistoric ancestors were walking the savannas, it was good to have a little fat, because there were going to be a time when you were going to not find much food, and that was going to get you through.
Our bodies were evolutionarily designed to do just that, to store fat. It's a very efficient source of energy. But in these times of plenty, when food is all around us and when we can pretty much eat when we want to, it has really become a detriment.
Yeah, but when did we start realizing that obese kids are aging prematurely?
This has only come about very recently. There's been so much focus on the more obvious chronic effects of obesity, such as heart disease and hypertension. But as people are beginning to see rates of things like fatty liver disease double, you know, in the past few decades, they're beginning to say, okay, what's going on here? You know, what else? What is the legacy of having this generation of kids carrying around extra weight from such a young age? And that's why they're looking sort of under the surface at what's going on at the cellular level.
Are they entering puberty younger than other kids?
One of the things fat cells do, and fat tissue also does, is it affects the hormone system. And as you can imagine, as we get older, we tend to put on a little more fat and accumulate a little more fat. And that's a signal to the body to start to mature sexually. And that's what's happening with these younger kids, too, as they're putting on extra weight, is that their bodies are maturing more quickly than they're, you know, really ready for the social and emotional consequences of being sexually active.
So the chromosomes of overweight children show the same signs of age as older people? Well, what does that look like under the microscope?
If you look at these, I was talking to the doctors, and it's just fascinating, as they say, if you take some of the tissues from these overweight kids and compare them to their parents, let's say, even, or adult parents and even their grandparents, they might be pretty indistinguishable. If you did not have that age, you probably wouldn't be able to tell who they belong to.
So what happens when these kids who have adult cells at the age of 10, what happens when they reach 20, 30, 40?
That's the big concern now. So I think as people were very worried about the obesity epidemic, this is what they were referring to. If you have a generation of children who are really aging more quickly than they should, you really have a generation who are facing, perhaps, for the first time, dying sooner than their parents' generation.
From hypertension, heart attacks. What about just the fatigue? Older people tend to get fatigued earlier. I'd imagine carrying around all that weight can really slow you down and also have an effect, you mentioned earlier, on joints, because your knees and your ankles are probably having to do work overtime to keep you up.
That's right. And that's what's happening here, is that it is a vicious cycle. So although we know that a lot of this is preventable, you know, with changes in diet, more physical activity, the heavier these children are, obviously, the harder it is for them to become active and to do the right thing. So it is a vicious cycle that we're beginning to see, that the only way to kind of break in some cases is with medications. And that raises a whole new issue of how soon do you want to start, you know, a preteen, a 10-year-old, on a medication that was tested and meant for his parents' generation.
And do we know, have studies been done, or are we afraid to do these studies on
we
kids?
Have some studies, very limited studies, that are just starting on things like statins, the very popular medications that lower cholesterol. So the American Academy of Pediatrics recently came out with guidelines that recommended that these can be prescribed in certain cases to kids as young as 8. And that raised a lot of eyebrows, as you can imagine, because we don't have the statins are only a few decades old. We don't have a lifetime of studies on these kids to see, are they at high risk of certain cancers? Do they develop other kinds of side effects, you know, from a lifetime of taking these drugs?
Well, patients take these maintenance drugs for years and years, but if you start taking them when you're 40 or so, it's maybe the rest of your life. If you start taking them when you're 10, that could be 70, 80 years.
That's the struggle that if you talk to pediatricians who treat many of these patients, you can see it, in what they tell you, that this is a huge conflict for them, that they see on the one hand, they know what's going to happen. If these children go untreated and they don't lose weight and their obesity continues, they know what's going to happen. They'll be at higher risk of heart disease, hypertension, fatty liver. If they do treat them, there's also a small risk because no medications are 100% safe.
And what about side effects? What kinds of side effects do we see in adults?
The side effects we know of with the statins in particular are muscle weaknesses, and they're relatively safe, the statins. But still, in a young body that's still developing, we just don't know the answer to that.
Well, some older people go to weight loss surgery. Can you do that with a child?
You can, and that's been a recent controversy as well. And when preteens are going under the knife in order to get bariatric surgery, you know, to have their stomach stapled and to lose weight. But this is, again, this is the struggle that doctors and parents are having, and trying to decide what are the risks of doing something, some interventions like that, medication, surgery, versus not treating it, or trying to treat it with diet and exercise, which we know is not always effective and takes a little bit longer.
I'm talking with Alice Park. Her article, Young Kids, Old Bodies, Runaway Obesity is Turning a Generation of Children into Biological Adults, Aging Them Before Their Time. It's in the March 3rd issue of Time magazine, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Alice Park, a staff writer for Time magazine. Her article, Young Kids, Old Bodies, appears in the March 3rd issue of the magazine. Is childhood obesity more damaging to the body than adult obesity, or is it that the damage begins at an earlier age and can affect those kids' overall health for a longer period of time?
I think at this point, it's probably the latter, that it's the concern about how long the body's being subjected to this stress. We don't know enough yet about it to know whether there is something particularly damaging about having all this begin much earlier.
Now, why are we only learning about it now? There's been childhood obesity for centuries.
I don't think we're learning about it now, but we're really more aware of it now and the need to intervene, because what we're seeing are these alarming rates of things like fatty liver disease and hypertension in kids. That's what's really kind of raising eyebrows and raising the alarm.
Well, are the effects largely reversible for kids?
In some cases it is, and that's why doctors are really hoping that more physicians, pediatricians, you know, who don't necessarily treat specialty conditions like fatty liver, are aware of the potential dangers so that they can talk to children and their families, really. It's very important to involve the whole family about the importance of intervening early and preventing things like cirrhosis, which requires a liver transplant.
Now, why is the liver particularly so much more vulnerable? Scar tissue in the liver can sometimes be irreversible, can't it?
It can. The concern is that for these kids, once the scar tissue is there and the liver cells in response start to function less efficiently. And when that happens, there's really no going back. So the liver transplant is their only option.
And the liver, because it's the organ in the body that deals with the whole issue of fat?
The liver is where you produce your cholesterol. It sort of breaks down all the products. It's where all the toxins come through. It is really the workhorse of the body. So if it's not functioning properly, it has very severe metabolic consequences.
And you write about a 10-year-old boy who's been diagnosed with having a fatty liver. 10 years old?
10 years old, yes. And this is not uncommon.
So is fatty liver usually connected to our cholesterol levels?
It is in some cases. There's two different kinds. I think most people are familiar with the fatty liver that is associated with excessive alcohol, abusing alcohol.
Well, this kid is probably not a heavy drinker.
No, no, there is.
So he's not getting cirrhosis in
the
liver.
No, that's not what's driving his issue. There's also non-alcoholic fatty liver, and that has now become the most common liver disorder among children, and that's what's really worrying doctors, because this is directly due to having excessive fat tissue embed and start building up in the liver.
Does being obese simply wear your body down faster?
I think from the evidence that we see now, it does. That's the prevailing theory, that it really acts like stress does, and it just has systemic effects across the whole body, and that's what they're beginning to appreciate.
And that's because those fat cells protect themselves?
It's because of how the fat cells act, how the body responds to carrying around extra fat tissue. And again, if the fat cells are very actively pumping out these chemicals, they're changing the way the body breaks down energy. They're also changing things like the body's response to inflammation, which is also known to be an independent way that the body tends to age, because responding to inflammation and having the whole immune system on alert all the time is also a stressor.
So is that what scientists are saying behind this aging and obesity connection?
That's what they believe right now. It's very early days in terms of understanding that association. They've seen some of this in animal studies. They've seen it in some adults and in these childhood cancer patients. So this is a very hot area of research now that they're looking into.
But we can't reverse the aging process. So what happens when...
The idea is to get in before this happens. So this is hopefully to raise the alarm about how important it is to address obesity before it gets to this point, before the liver starts to fail, and before we start seeing some of these systemic effects.
And we haven't talked about type 2 diabetes.
Type 2 diabetes is really the consequence of having a body that's no longer responding, you know, to the insulin's no longer responding to the sugar. So that's an issue that comes when you've got so much fat and obesity that it's really difficult for the body to metabolize and break down and keep up, really, essentially, with the energy needs.
Is it treated differently in kids and teens than it is in adults?
I think at this point, it's not. They're more conscious of starting medications and when to start medications. But again, it goes back to that balance of saying, you know, how likely is it that this child will adjust his or her diet and exercise plan and lose some weight and therefore address the threat of diabetes versus needing to bring those levels down very quickly with drugs.
Well, the cost of these treatments is probably quite high, and obesity is often a problem with people who are in lower income brackets. So what's happening there? Who's paying for the treatments?
That's a big issue.
Is Obamacare going to cover any of this?
I think that was the idea. That's the whole shift that we're hoping to see now toward prevention. As many of the doctors have pointed out to me, you know, the only real way to address this is to prevent it and to raise awareness about how important it is to not get to this point where you need the therapies and the treatments.
And preventing it means changing lifestyle.
Changing lifestyle, making sure that kids are getting outside, moving around, getting the physical activity they need, and avoiding things like fast food and sodas, which so much of the young people today are dependent on.
But isn't this a vicious cycle? Because if you are overweight, you're less likely to want to go outside and run around a lot.
That's the issue. So in talking to the doctors, you know, how do you address this? Because they know full well what happens. And they also know that in the first weeks or months after they come to the doctor, you know, families are very motivated to change the diet and to try to make changes in their eating and exercise plan. But it doesn't hold. You know, like a New Year's resolution, it's very hard to keep up. So I think what doctors are starting to do now is change your strategy about how they talk to these patients and families about it. And so they're asking things rather than saying, you really need to lose weight, or why don't you go out and pick up a sport or get more active. They're doing something called motivational interviewing, which is asking the kids and trying to get the kids themselves to say what means most to them as far as their favorite sporting activity or their favorite, you know, food to eat and why they shouldn't be eating it or why they could eat more of things like fruits and vegetables.
Now, I guarantee you that based on past experience, I'm going to get a number of emails from listeners who are going to complain that we are stigmatizing of people who are overweight, and that it's not a real problem, that it's only something that involves things like making moral judgments about people when we really don't understand what's going on with them.
Well, I think as with anything, you know, when you have people who are overweight, you will have some people who are, there's this, you know, popular phrase called fit and fat, who can be overweight and their numbers still look good. They don't have hypertension. They don't have diabetes. And their hearts look pretty healthy. They do get a certain amount of exercise. I think what we're talking about here really is from a biological and medical point of view, for most people, the issue is that we're understanding there are dangers to having too much, carrying around too much fat tissue.
Well, the First Lady has made fighting childhood obesity one of her main priorities with the Let's Move program. And then there are people who complain that this is just another example of the nanny state. When Mayor Bloomberg tried to cut back on fatty foods and when he tried to cut down on the sugary drinks, people complained.
I think people will always complain. They'll complain when we've got too many of these unhealthy foods around and say, why aren't we doing enough, you know, to help people then? If doctors on the one hand are telling us and public health experts are telling us you need to eat better, you need to exercise more, I think people will complain, well, then give us the healthier foods. Give us places where we can run safely and exercise in a park. But I think what we're really beginning to understand here is that a lot of this really takes a community. You know, it takes not just a family trying to eat right, but it takes a food industry providing good options. It takes, an economy that allows the fresh and healthy foods to be at a compatible price to the fast foods so that when people do have a choice, they're able to make it based on for the right reasons.
Well, isn't part of the problem that obesity in children is likely to occur in family where there's obesity in adults?
It's very, very, the two correlate very well. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of the doctors that I spoke to have emphasized how their strategies really now involve teams of doctors where you talk not just to, you know, a specialist about a liver, but you also talk to perhaps a family counselor who can help understand how the family's behavior really can help and influence how the child eats and plays.
obesity doesn't just affect a kid's physical health. One of the parents you spoke to described how her daughter no longer wanted to socialize because of her weight and health problems.
Being obese as a child, too, has a lot of consequences, as you said, for children's psychological states. We've seen a study show that heavier kids tend to be a little more vulnerable to things like depression and certainly to bullying, which can set up a situation that makes them, you know, much more sensitive and fragile in a school environment. So, you know, we're really talking about a condition here where it's not just saying, yes, you're a little heavier than your counterparts. We're really seeing that it has wide-ranging biological, psychological, and behavioral consequences.
The magazine is just out, but have you been receiving any mail in this regard? Have people been responding?
We have. I've received a lot of messages of support, just, you know, saying that they're glad to read about this because it was some of it was new to them to understand, you know, really how I guess insidiously, you know, fat tissue can affect the body and for how long over a lifetime. So most of it is pretty much in support of the awareness that this is bringing to the issue.
And the photographs and the charts, definitely the diagrams, definitely can be rather scary. Thank you so much for being on our show. Alice Park is a staff writer at Time Magazine, where she covers health, medicine, nutrition, and fitness. And her article, Young Kids, Old Bodies, is in the March 3rd issue of Time Magazine. Thank you so much for coming by.
My pleasure.